Moving right along in the 2016 high school football regular season, and there are no more unbeatens. One team was off, two of the three smaller schools were winners, and two of the three bigger schools that saw action came out on top as well. There was a big upset that we'll discuss as our schools finished the week with a 4-2 record. Plenty of teams, plenty of talent, and plenty of action. Brett Quinton with the C-Town Rivals podcast, where high school sports is always on the agenda. Ralph Amson and Chili join me this week, so reach out to us via Twitter. You know we love to tweet back. Visit us on ArizonaVarsity.com, plenty of news and insight. And of course, give a like to our Facebook page. You'll love it. We begin with the Valley Christian Trojans, and this team is looking like world beaters these days. The final over the North Point Falcons is 76-0. First off, I'm a big defensive guy, so the three interception returns for touchdowns was very impressive. Running back Jake Orth ran for a score and also returned a punt for a touchdown. Quarterback Peyton Handel, a sophomore with a couple of TD passes, and a freshman QB named Vinny Legata, he tosses a touchdown pass as well. Props to wide receiver Stephen Mohan on the receiving end of three of those TD passes. This team has some pieces. It looks like they're coming together. The 76 points, possibly the single game school record. Back-to-back shutouts for the first time in a couple of years. And Ralph, we've seen a lot of running clocks over the last handful of seasons, but this might be the earliest. It came at the 10:35 mark of the second quarter.
That's absurd. I mean, that's a good way to make up for the fact that 70-some points are scored, that the clock gets to run all the way through.
Yep.
I'm not so sure how this level of competition is going to help them moving forward, but it does help to get a little bit healthy and be able to play North Point and ASU Prep back-to-back. We'll see what it means when they actually have a couple of tough games coming up.
Absolutely, yeah, because you are indeed right. The back-to-back shutouts, while that's great-looking, not necessarily the toughest of the schedules.
It's always exciting to get some wins under your belt. You know, I know Jeff Rutledge, his team was kind of struggling early on, and, you know, sometimes to get things back on track, you got to schedule, some powder puff squads that you can beat up on, so that way your team can understand, you know, what it takes to actually win some games.
Because that is part of development, winning.
Right. And Jeff Rutledge isn't the type to just run the score up, so I'm sure, you know, he had some, you know, backups and third stringers in there, getting some experience.
And what can you do when you get three pick sixes?
Right. I mean, you can't tell, you can only tell your kids to take a knee so many times on offense. Once the defense starts getting involved and starts making plays, you got to let the defense get in the end zone and, you know, run those touchdowns back, because they don't get all those opportunities all the time. They beat this team 76-0. Let's just hope that they can keep the momentum going for the city of Chandler.
And I do think they can. Up next for the Trojans are the Fountain Hills Falcons. That's a team that's 2-5. Another great chance for another win. The Seton Catholic Sentinels, they fall to the Tempe Buffaloes 27-15. The Buffaloes seemingly were in control for most of the game, although it was a tightly contested contest. Chili, the one thing that was consistent is the running game. Wade County found pay dirt not once, but twice.
New Wade County. You know, I'm a big supporter. Nick Wade, he's doing his thing out there. I know I talked to him one time after the Yuma Catholic game, and very humble kid. He told me that, you know, he watches a lot of tape on Antonio Campanella to, you know, kind of see, you know, how to find the holes in the line and stuff like that. He's a studier. He's a film guy. He works hard, and, Jacob Terrell's out there, you know, trying to figure it out. I know they struggled against Tempe. They had some problems containing Mike King Johnson. They're not the only ones. A lot of people have had trouble containing him. That seems to be what the biggest problem for them was. And a lot of teams are going to have those issues. I know up next they got a very, very angry Marcos Deniza team that me and Ralph went out to. The last time Marcos Deniza played, they got, I would say they kind of got stomped on by Saguaro. Everybody gets stomped on by Saguaro. So, you know, everybody is Saguaro's doormats these days. So, I think Naz Greer's going to play angry. He's going to be at his best. And if Naz Greer is at his best, you know, God bless the Sentinels defense, because, you know, he is one of the best quarterbacks in the state that does not have a major college offer, and I think he is due for one.
Yeah, I mean, he has the ACU offer, and we'll see what else he's able to do. He does some things really well. He also has a tendency to he throws a lot, and so you know, he can force the ball downfield every once in a while. I really, really like him. I like his arm. I like what he brings to the table. I think he'd be a really good fit with some of the RMAC schools around the Colorado area or maybe southern Utah. And that's what Seton Catholic's going to have to deal with, is one of the state's best quarterbacks. They didn't pass the test against Tempe, and a lot of that has to do with Tempe's pass rush. You know, lucky for Seton Catholic, you know, they're going to be in this same section next year, and Mike King Johnson will have been graduated. So you won't have to deal with them anymore beyond this. But at the same time, a victory over Marco Sinisa probably puts them in really, really solid position to hold a playoff spot.
Mm-hmm. Right,
because they're still benefiting from that Yuma Catholic win.
Sure.
Even though that's a division below them. But it's going to take everything they have.
And Marcus's only two losses are to Saguaro, very, very good.
Yep.
And Casa Grande.
Yeah, also, who's also having a good season.
Yeah,
right?
Also 5-2. Very, very good. So beating a Marcos team with, you know, do wonders for Seton's momentum, even though they just lost to Tempe, and do a lot for their confidence as a team.
Absolutely. So, yeah, let's see if how well Gary Gallant's team can play this week. But as you guys said, Marco Sinisa, indeed, a very tough opponent. The Castile Colts, they get back to their winning ways by clubbing Fountain Hills 57-6. How about Gunnar Cruz? The sophomore quarterback was 24 of 31 for 369 yards and 6 touchdown passes. Cruz ran for a score as well. Mac Johnson broke off for 141 yards on the ground and a score. Ralph, this team is scary good. They seemingly can beat you in all facets of the game.
Yeah, and because of where they started and the fact that they actually are participating in live varsity action this year, they're on pace to, you know, mess with some record books and basically ruin it for everybody who's going to come after them, who has to go through a full four-year class. It's rare that your initial records that are set are the ones that will stand the test of time for such a long time. But if Gunnar Cruz and Mac Johnson keep doing what they're doing, I mean, it's going to be really hard for somebody else to come in and at least take on the career records that those guys are setting. We saw them have some success keeping the ball on the ground. Gunnar Cruz is responsible for 6 touchdowns this time. 24 for 31 is absurd. It doesn't matter who you're playing against. Throwing over 300 yards passing in a game is great, you know. And yeah, I was told about him. I was told about him when he was coming in his ninth grade year. That he was a special athlete by Joey Vincent, the former Hamilton quarterback who still holds their record for most touchdown passes in a season. He said this is a kid that could come in and do some special things and ultimately end up playing college football.
And so far, he's on that track. You're absolutely right.
You know, Castile gave up 14 points their first 5 games and then got rocked by Yuma Catholic. So I think people were wondering, like, how are they going to respond? How are they going to come out their next game? Is it going to be a close game? Or are they going to get back to what they did their first 5 games? I think the fact that they got back to doing what they did early on in the season, they only gave up 6 points to Fountain Hill.
Yep.
So, you know, I think that it kind of shows who Castile is. The coaching is obviously phenomenal because they were able to get their team to regroup, rebound, refocus, and get back into it.
And right now they're seeded number 9. So I would imagine by season's end, my guess is they'll finish in the top 8 and actually be able to host a playoff game. Friday's going to be ugly, folks. They head to ASU Prep to take on a team that is 1-5 and has been shut out in their last 3 games. The Basha Bears, I have to say, surprise, surprise. This was the upset we were telling you guys about. Gerald Todd's team goes to downtown Phoenix and gives the Brophy Broncos their first loss of the year, 27-24. Basha scored on the first drive of the game when Ryan Kelly, what else is new, he connects with Connor Collins on a 58-yard touchdown pass. Later in the half, senior Kyle Touris, on his only carry of the game, he brings it in from the 1, 2-point conversion good, and the Bears had a 14-10 halftime lead. The second of 3 TD passes goes to Jalen Goodman from 45 yards out. That gave Basha a 21-17 lead, but Brophy would counter that later in the fourth quarter for a go-ahead score. But in the end, Kelly to Brown was the difference. Brown, 10 catches for over 130 yards. Chili, tell me about this Bears team. They've now won three of their last four, and consequently their opponents have not broken the 30-point mark in those wins.
I've said it over and over again. Any team that Ryan Kelly is a part of, I don't care if it's the Bash of Bears or ASU next year, anytime he steps on the field, he gives his team a chance to win just by him being out there. Ryan Kelly's the best quarterback this state has seen in a long time.
Yep.
He's right up there with the Bryce Perkins and, you know, the legendary ones, the Ryan Keeleys and everybody like that. So, you know what? Anytime that Ryan Kelly is a part of the Bash offense, I just know they have a chance to win, and Absolutely. He proved that.
And, Ralph, I'll say this. The Bears now rank 20 in the playoff seating. Last week, they were ranked 30. We talked about this over the weekend of, wow, with that upset over Brophy, how much would they jump? And indeed, they're knocking on the door of the postseason, possibly.
Yeah, we even called it. We said they jumped 10 spots. Mm-hmm. It's probably still be sitting outside, but they jump 10 spots. I bumped them up in the state 48 power rankings to back up in the power 48 because, I mean, how can you ignore the fact that Brophy was undefeated and really was in control of their own destiny to possibly hold the number one seed in the state. They were number one, according to AIA Max Preps, going into the game. Interestingly enough, this is not the first time that Basha has taken on an undefeated Brophy on the road, come back from behind to win by a field goal. They also pulled this off in the 2011 playoffs to an undefeated Brophy team and knocked him out of what I believe was the quarterfinals at the time under Bernie Buskin the year before we actually started covering Chandler Sports for C-Town Rivals. It's one of the things with all the success that everybody was having that kind of spurred us to get this whole thing started. And so
I didn't realize they were unbeaten, actually, because you figure at that point in 2011, I was watching the Chandler schools from afar. But, yeah, I knew about the upset, but, wow, they were unbeaten?
Yeah, cool. Okay. Brophy was 11-0 going into that game. Ranked number two in those playoff seedings, and I believe it was Desert Vista that ultimately won the championship in what was a kind of a wild playoff round. But yeah, but Basha came in. They were 8-3. They were down in the second half. They came back. They won by three at Phoenix College. Same exact way it went down early. So it was very reminiscent. And Basha has officially become the thorn in Brophy's side and a team that if they can sneak their way back up in, you'd have to assume if Basha makes the playoffs, they're going to be in that 12 to 16 range. This is a team that Brophy might end up facing in the first round of the playoffs if all goes right for Basha. So it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
And up next is the Hamilton Huskies. They have a 5-2 record. Should be a little bit closer than last year when the Huskies were 62-14 winners. And indeed, like Ralph said, wow, Basha is knocking on the door of the playoffs. That just shows why this is indeed the premier section. Chandler 44, Perry 35. That was the final this past Friday night in a highly anticipated scoring matchup. Fellas, the first quarter, we were all there. I'm not going to roll off too many stats in this one. This was just up and down all the way. 42 first quarter points, 28 of them by Chandler. For me, the difference in the game was Ryan Johnson's kickoff return for the touchdown. The Pumas have playmakers, and Nate James was on the receiving end for 181 yards and four scores. But in the end, Chili or Ralph, Chandler definitely has more experienced playmakers.
Yeah, without question. The TJ Greens and we were kind of curious, you know, what we were going to see from Perry.
Four picks against.
And, we kind of tried to see, what Perry would bring to the table after their, staggering start. How Brock Purdy, kind of came in to relieve DeShane James from his quarterback duties. Man, just things were working for about the first 10, 12 minutes for Perry in the first half. And then for like the first 10 and then like the last like 5 minutes of the second half. But everything in between, it was all Chandler.
Absolutely.
All Chandler momentum, all Chandler everything. Perry, like, they kind of were who we thought they were. Like,
that's right.
We kind of knew that this was, we kind of expected this.
Correct.
But on the bright side of things, for Perry, they didn't give up.
Right. There's a lot of positives that they can and should, and I believe have taken from that loss. Absolutely.
They kept swinging, and that's what impressed me the most. They kept trying to come back, even though I think a lot of teams would have conceded to Chandler.
Mm-hmm.
They would have bowed out. They would have said, you know what? we just can't beat this team. Purdy, all those boys, they kept fighting and fighting to the very end. Like, they actually believed with 2 minutes and down nine or one minute and down nine that they could actually score a touchdown, maybe get an onside kick. And it was kind of cool to watch because I thought that at the beginning of the fourth quarter, I thought that was it. I thought they were ready to tap out, but
yes,
they didn't.
Absolutely.
It surprised me. TJ Green, though, that boy's amazing.
He is. He's very deserving of going D1. And earlier this week, I was able to catch up with head coach Sean Aguano.
Coach Aguano, the last time you guys took the field, the final score was 44-35 over Perry. What type of game was it? Obviously, you guys prepared, and we all kind of thought it was going to be high scoring. Is that what you expected? Is that kind of the game plan that kind of went through?
You know, I thought our offense has been on the roll the last couple of weeks. We gave back a few touchdowns at the second half, but I thought we should have done a little bit better job with the penalties and putting the game away earlier and not coming down to a predicament. But like we talked before, Perry's getting better. Mm-hmm. So they scored, and I thought our defense rallied around it. But we need to finish those games off in the third quarter.
There's no secret that this is the premier division or premier section. I think that's what they technically call it, the premier. Yes, you guys played the Mountain Points, and you went out to California, and you certainly played some, we're going to say, elite teams. But how difficult is it to go from, say, a Sandra Day O'Connor or a Millennium, that sort of caliber team, into your section from 1 week to the other?
You know, for us, the last couple of years, I've planned it like that, playing the elite teams in the beginning and then maybe the less caliber teams in the middle so we could work on things and see how our team and evaluate our team and what kind of team we are, and then get ready for the region and healthy. And that's how it played out this season as well. So we're healthy as we've ever been going into the region play. We've won our first two games in region, and now we have Brophy and Hamilton. It's going to be a task, but we're ready for it.
And speaking of being healthy, you have the week off. It's got to be nice in a sense. You guys have played on a Saturday out of state. You guys have had a Thursday game. You've had your normal Fridays. So there was a period of time you played three games in 12 days. But now to be off for a week must be nice to heal the bumps and bruises and kind of implement a game plan.
You know, I think psychologically for both the players and the coaches, to give them a time off. So I gave them Saturday, Sunday, and Monday off. And we came in here and lifted, and we lift throughout the week. We'll get back to work tomorrow and get ready for Brophy and scout them against Perry on Friday. But just to give our kids a break leg-wise, and it is a long season, and we're planning to go 14 weeks.
Absolutely. Now with Brophy on the horizon, obviously they were upset Friday by Basham. What do they bring to the table? Obviously you have not played them yet, and you've still got them 2 weeks out, but kind of give us an early scouting report on what you've seen from them.
I like their discipline. They run the football real well. Their quarterback, Pittinger, is a very good running back. You know, we're going to go against a defense that plays solid defense. Their defensive coordinator was with me 2 years ago when we won the state championship. And so we've seen him at practice. I think athlete-wise, we match up real well. I think interior we do as well, but it'll come down who makes the less mistakes.
There'll be plenty of time to ask you about the rivalry down the street, the Hamilton Huskies. But what I will ask is, this year it is the season finale. Previous years it's been mid-season. Is there a preference for you? Does it matter? You just line up whoever's in front of you?
It doesn't matter. I think I like it at the end of the year. There's a hype going right into the playoff. Again, it's a tough game. It's been a rivalry. We've had them beat them the last couple of games. But it's for the town of Chandler and the community, it's a great game for their players and ours as well.
And speaking of the playoffs, something you mentioned on Friday, your goal is, well, obviously you'd love to have the number one seed, but more than likely the two or three seed is pretty expectable, if that's a word, expectable. Yeah. What do you need to do to get that? Obviously you want to win out, but kind of tell us maybe the weaknesses of your team. We certainly know the strengths.
Yeah, I think...
I shouldn't even say weaknesses, but things you want to work on.
I think defensively we got to work. We're very young on the defensive side of the ball. Offensive is our strength. And trying to stop them making mistakes. The last three or four games, penalties have derailed a couple of series that I thought we could put teams away. So we're going to work on that and just getting back to fundamentals and being healthy coming into the playoffs.
From an offensive standpoint, you are led by a sophomore quarterback, Jacob Conover. How has he been as far as expectations? Because in previous years, you knew what Mason Moran was going to bring. You knew what Bryce Perkins was going to bring and so forth. There is a D1 pipeline under center from you guys. But Conover's kind of new, a sophomore QB. Is he where you expected him to be at the mid or the latter stage of the year?
You know, I knew being a sophomore, he's going to make mistakes. And he made some mistakes in the Mountain Point game. Mm-hmm. I think he's played really well. He's only thrown three picks and is thrown for over 2,000 yards and his completion rate is at 68%. So he's getting the ball to our guys and making good decisions, running when he needs to. As a sophomore, and to play in our offense is tough, and he's done real well, and so I'm very proud of him.
And I'm looking at your board, in which I'm sure there's a lot of guys on this board that you're proud of. No less than, we'll say, 9 guys have offers to play college football or football at the next level. What's it mean when you get an offer, or not you get an offer, when one of your players gets an offer? I'm sure you're just elated. You've been probably a father figure to some of these guys. You guys are all family. You just keep the pipeline going.
You know, it's just to see them and knowing that they're going to go be playing football and progressing through school. That's the biggest part. And when we talk about making sure that they get their education first, and when it's paid for, that's a lot off of the parents' pocketbooks. And so I've been through the process probably about 150 times, and so every single time, you know, there's tears, there's elation, there's all those things, but knowing that they have to now go and earn it too once they're there for the next 5 years. So it's just a starting point, but I love how our kids are getting offers and moving to the next level.
And what does a coach of your caliber do on a Friday night when your team is not playing? I know you're a family guy, but will you be at a game or will you be family?
No, I will spend our week is off from school, so I'm going to spend all Friday with my family. And then at 4 o'clock, the coaches are meeting, and then we're going to go to the Perry Brophy game to scout that game. I think it's very important for the next, just to see the speed up front and in person and not just on film. And so we're going to go see that and then get ready Saturday and move on like it's a regular week.
Coach, as always, C-Town Rivals is rooting for you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Brent.
So what we've seen from the Pumas, I'm going to say that, yes, they are talented, and kind of what we touched on, they're not there yet. They are not in that elite status. This is a program that wants to be in that circle. They still haven't proved anything. I mean, we know they have the athletes. We know that they're on the cusp of something big. But, Ralph, I just don't see them as the elite yet. They still have a ways to go.
Yeah, and then at the same time, we know that Hamilton's beatable and we know that Brophy's beatable.
Yes.
So it's very possible that this season, you know, where they might feel like it's a little bit of a letdown in that they lost to Chandler, this season still might end up being one of their best ever. I'm not sure they've had an 8-win regular season. I know they've had a few 7-win regular seasons that vaulted them into the Division II playoffs back when that was a thing. But this could really still be a special year. They can still salvage things because they only have quality opponents. We had talked about them needing to win 2 of 4 to really earn our respect as maybe not one of the elite teams, but one of the very good teams.
Mm-hmm.
And they still have an opportunity to do that, but it's take your pick. You know, that's Hamilton, that's Brophy, that's Basha, and Basha's still technically older brother. So
correct.
It's going to be really interesting to see. Mm-hmm. And I also like to point out, I know that nobody ever gives you credit for calling something. They only ever want to see you proved wrong. And I got a few looks as Perry was walking out on the field. And a few comments. You know, we saw your prediction. We saw your prediction. We saw your prediction. But what do you say to somebody when they actually, like, called the final score and everything? I don't think anybody's going to be walking off that field like, oh, you were right.
Correct.
But what Chili brought up is important. This is what we expected. And for me to predict that Perry would lose by 10, I said, I believe, 44-34. It was actually 44-35.
Correct.
But for I thought I was giving Perry, you're going to score 5 touchdowns
right
on Chandler. I just didn't feel like they would have an answer for TJ Green. And the truth is, that's really how it ended up working out. Chandler scored on the 3rd play of the game with TJ Green. And then on the ensuing kickoff.
Correct.
With Ryan Johnson. And 4 minutes into the game, it was 14-7. And that's just kind of the pace it went at. When it settled down, Perry did a really, really good job. But those touchdowns that get scored in the opening moments of any game, those count.
Yes, they
do. Those count. It's the same as scoring in the third quarter. It's the same as scoring in the fourth quarter. Just because you settled down doesn't mean you handled your business.
Correct.
And they still got to get to the point where they can handle their business. Now, I want to mention this just so that nobody thinks that we're forgetting. The reffing, and I don't always call this out.
No, you're right. No, go, yeah.
Was...
suspect.
It was bad.
Subpar.
Subpar, yeah. It, no doubt about that. Absolutely.
And I can call out plays on both sides of the ball.
And that's the thing. It was... because I've heard from both parties after the game and even into earlier this week, oh, if this call had happened or this call had happened... the calls were bad on both sides. Absolutely. So I will say, even though it was poor reffing, it did not cost Perry the game.
I don't feel like it cost Perry the game. I just feel like it gave Perry an excuse when they don't need an excuse. They need a realization that there are some things that you need to improve if you want to beat Chandler.
That's right. That's spot on.
I think that the reffing was very, very disruptive to Perry's flow. Like, they were hoping and expecting the home field advantage of sorts with the refs. Whereas Chandler, like, they've dealt with it before. They've been through it.
That's fair.
They cause it a lot.
And they cause it a lot.
So once you get your first or second personal foul, the refs just get trigger fingers.
That's right. A good point. It's a very good point.
I'm really curious to see how this team responds.
Right.
I'm really
they've
curious
got
to see
the,
how Perry responds.
Absolutely. They've got Brophy obviously coming in, which is a totally different type of matchup than against Chandler. Obviously, it was athlete for athlete. Brophy's coming in with a game plan.
And, you know, Perry's got to take one thing from this. When you are winning, you are going to be under the microscope. So, you know,
definitely.
I have to... you know, I'm not saying that Preston Jones is doing anything wrong. I'm not saying that I would blame him for anything. But against Chandler, my man, DeShane James got to get the ball more somehow. I don't care how. Because you got to try to put your best athlete in a position to do some damage to Chandler by, you know, I don't know what the right way is. I thought Purdy played a great game.
He did.
But maybe you let DeShane James take a few more snaps. Maybe you just figure out a way to hand the ball off to him a couple more times. Like, there's got to be a way. I don't care if you make, like, 7 or 8 packages that involve DeShane getting the ball immediately.
Absolutely.
But that you gotta do something, because DeShane is so, so special.
He is. Oh,
he's so incredibly special. And by not doing that, I think you're doing yourself a disservice against a team like Chandler.
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right.
That's a great use of the tight end by Perry, though.
Oh yeah, that was fantastic. We almost forgot about that.
Tate.
That was great.
Tate
Speaker.
Yeah.
He performed very well. Wasn't even so much in his actual numbers, but they used him very effectively.
Yeah,
right.
I was impressed with some of the calls that Perry made. I think they were taken out of rhythm by the refs a little bit. The three, but if I'm counting down, and I really do have 10 calls that I have serious questions about.
Definitely.
3 of the top 5, though, went against Chandler. And so it wasn't necessarily it's just all around. It was like the refs weren't really engaged in what was going on.
And I love the way Preston Jones handled it. He was in the refs' ears early on. Like, yo, they heard him. And he went to battle for his boys. And his boys need to see that. His team needs to see that. Whereas, like, you know, Aguano got the very laid-back approach because, you know, he's
That's
dealt
him.
With it. You know,
and he knows how to do that.
And
right?
His team knows how to handle it from that side. So, you know, I just love seeing, like, hey, Preston, he knows his team is undefeated right now. He knows his team is playing the big dogs. He knows his team is playing the team that runs Chandler. And he knows that, like, hey, I'm going to show my boys that I'm going to fight for them. And he was in those refs in the right way, too. Like,
yes, he was. Yes,
know,
he was.
He was pointing it out the way it should have been pointed out. And I was really, like, impressed for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, as we said, I mean, the Pumas played well. And there's some things that they definitely have to take from that game. But moving forward, yes, they have Brophy on the slate. They have Hamilton on the slate. And as you said, the big brother of Perry, and that's Bashir. So, yeah, they've got some climbing to do, and until they get that W, and Perry has a lot of listenership for us, and sometime they have some words for us, but at the same time, you got to get a W.
Ralph, I'm curious how you feel about this. I think they have to, not by choice, they have to get these wins against Brophy and Hamilton, because I don't think Ryan Kelly, if he suits up, he will not lose to Perry.
You might be right. Senior
year. I don't think he has any respect for Perry, and I think it's up to Perry to make him.
And that'd be his last home game.
Yeah, it's gonna be at Basha.
Mm-hmm.
I watched the way that Brock Purdy takes off with the ball, and some of the things that he does when he's running it. I watched the connection that he has with Nate James, the way that they use their tight end. I was very impressed with the way that a smaller offensive line blocked for Perry. Mm-hmm. I look at some of the things they can do offensively, and it's like they're halfway at their best when things break down and halfway at their best when they stay like disciplined and execute the game plan. I guess that, you know, they can do a little bit of both. So, but I don't see them being able to be helter-skelter against Brophy.
Correct.
And get a win. I mean, they're going to have to play within themselves. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to beat Brophy on talent. And I think it's pretty even as far as talent goes between those two schools. When it comes to Hamilton, they're going to have to just make less mistakes. And Hamilton's been beating themselves.
Yep.
You just can't turn the ball over. And Perry will turn the ball over every once in a while. So don't, you know, match talent for talent against Brophy. Don't beat yourself against Hamilton. And then when you go in against Basha, look at your record versus theirs. Make up your mind that you're the better team and do what you're supposed to do. Because they don't care about you. They're not going to care about your record. Perry could come in the number one ranked team, 9-0, and Basha isn't going to believe any of it until you make them see.
That's right.
And so as far as right now, I can't even envision Perry being Basha,
right,
because I know that Basha doesn't even – they don't think that way.
Correct. You're absolutely right. Good, yeah.
I'm also curious now. Now I got to jump to the other game. I know that we got Basha-Hamilton also, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's coming up. So now Hamilton has had the week off, right? Hamilton had the week off.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they've had some time to kind of think about things. And I'm pretty sure that they were thinking like, oh, you know, we got Basha up next. They're going to lay the egg against Brophy. Brophy's going to get that W. And we'll just steamroll Basha. That didn't happen. They had to get the Twitter reports, go to the game, and watch this Basha team just beat a team that they lost
to. That they got smoked by.
That they got. They played them tough. Is that doing anything to Hamilton, you guys think?
I think that just makes the Hamilton practices that much more intense this week.
Well, if they pay attention to what I write, I said 3 months before the season started, this is the year that Basha finally beats Hamilton. So they've been pissed off about that. If they pay attention to that kind of stuff, they've been pissed off about that for months. For months. And so, you know, they might have needed Basha to beat Brophy to take this game seriously. But I don't think so. No, I can't say this delicately, so I'm just going to come out and say it. Nobody likes Basha. Nobody likes Basha, okay? If you go to Hamilton and Perry is playing Basha, you root for Perry.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to Hamilton and Chandler's playing Basha, you swallow your own vomit for a second and you root for
Chandler.
That's been the way... I'm not making this up.
I believe you.
That has been the way it is for the last few years. Basha kind of gets under everybody's skin with whether it's, you know, social media or that, you know, they've had some people on the team going all the way back to J.W. Windsor who just knew how to get under people's skin, you know, and everyone would always root for Basha to get theirs, you know, because it used to be they kind of had an attitude that reflected Bernie Buskins.
Okay.
You know? And now, you know, a lot of that's just been retained, sort of this, like, you know, regional, like, badassery attitude, wow. You know, and other schools, it's funny. It's just been that way. They kind of collectively root for whoever Basha is playing against.
Wow. So okay.
I don't think there's any occurrence in which Hamilton would not have been able to get up for this game anyway, but at least they'll have some respect for their opponent going in. They just have to not make mistakes, and they'll probably win the game. But I'm also a person that has to stick with what I said months before the season even started and say, like, the streak has to end sometime. Mm-hmm. So even though Basha started the season in a way where I don't even believe what I'm saying, I got to stick to my guns because I said it. So I think that Basha does the improbable. They figure out a way to pull this off, and you know, you're looking at a Hamilton team that could go into the playoffs, maybe 7-3, maybe 6-4. So,
and that's crazy. Who would think that?
And it is crazy, but it's still Hamilton, and it's still
mm-hmm.
playoffs, and they still have the recipe that gets you past teams.
Yep.
In all actuality, Hamilton's probably going to go and grind it out, punish Basha, and that's what it'll be. But I have to talk myself into, this is my Skip Bayless moment. I said it, I got to stick with it. Skip Bayless believes Tim Tebow's still an NFL quarterback. I still believe Basha breaks this streak against Hamilton at some point.
All righty. Well, fellas, this is a premier show representing a premier section. We are three premier guys, Ralph, Chili, and Brett. We're out.